The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I'd like to welcome back to the program today Otto Penzler. He joins us on the telephone in Manhattan. Welcome back to the program, Otto.
Thank you so much, Vic. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Otto, I got really excited when I saw that the best mystery stories of the year was getting ready to come out, and we got in touch, and you agreed to do another interview. Tell us about this series.
Well, there was a series that I was the editor of for 20 years called Best American Mystery Stories of the Year, and that changed, and I have started this new series. This is Volume 1, the first year of the new series called The Best Mystery Stories of the Year. The actual title is The Mysterious Bookshop Presents The Best Mystery Stories of the Year,
uh-huh.
And I asked Lee Child to be the guest editor, and he agreed. So it's a Lee Child book as well as an Otto Penzler book.
So you've got this incredible editor working for you, a guy who apparently has maybe a little more spare time, Lee Child.
Well, you know, I guess he does, because he's essentially moving out of writing the Jack Reacher series. He and his brother have collaborated on the last two. And assuming that Lee means what he says, he's done. And his brother will take over the series, the Jack Reacher series, on a full-time basis on his own.
Otto, you mentioned that the full title is The Mysterious Bookshop Presents. So I suppose we better mention what The Mysterious Bookshop is, because we have some listeners out here in Ohio who are not familiar with this enterprise.
Oh, well, shame on them. Let's educate them then. The Mysterious Bookshop is a bookshop obviously specializing in mystery fiction that I started on Friday the 13th of April, 1979. So here we are at 42 and a half years later, still in business. It used to be in Midtown on 56th Street, right behind Carnegie Hall. And now it's downtown in Tribeca, about four blocks north of the World Trade Center.
Last time I had you on the show, we talked a little bit about your collecting mania. And I'm curious to know how you got into this. When did you discover these books? And how did this become such a passion for you?
Gee, you know, it's kind of hard to identify the actual moment, because it's something that evolved over time. You know, I was an English major at University of Michigan, and so one of the things that you learn when you're a literary major, literature major, is that a lot of what you read is hard work. You know, so reading the Russian novelists and reading James Joyce and reading poets like Ezra Pound and T.S. Eliot, you really have to think, and sometimes it's exhausting. And so when I came back to New York, I wanted to keep reading, because I've always read my whole life, but I didn't want to keep hurting my head. And so I thought, I'm going to read some mysteries, because I'd never read mysteries as a young person. And I started reading them, and I liked the puzzles, and I enjoyed the Golden Age mysteries. And then I discovered Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, and I realized that this could be taken as serious literature, which it is. And I had this thing about collecting first editions, and I started collecting English and American literature, like all of it. And fortunately, a bookseller, a wise bookseller, said, unless you're a lot richer than I think you are and have unlimited space and unlimited time, you might want to narrow your field of collecting a little bit. And so this was back in the 1960s, and there was very little competition for mystery fiction first editions. So I started collecting that. And then I co-wrote a book called The Encyclopedia of Mystery and Detection for which I won an Edgar. But if you, you know, once you write an encyclopedia, you're then regarded as the world's leading expert on the subject. And so I kind of moved into that area. I got to know some writers. I got talked into starting a publishing company, and then eventually opened a bookshop, and it just all kind of grew.
I'll say. How many books have you edited? Do you have any idea?
Well, there are two kinds of editing. Editing anthologies is kind of collecting the stories, reading the stories, collecting them, maybe writing introductions to them. And so I call myself the editor of those books. But Mysterious Press began publishing in the mid-1970s, and I've been publishing ever since. So that is a different kind of editing. My name isn't on those books. My author's names are on those books.
Mm.
And so I guess I'm going to say way over 1,000 of that kind of book, and anthologies more than 70.
Well, I'm just curious. You just made me think of something here. The last time I had you on the show, we talked a lot about the espionage writer Charles McCary, who you admire so much. And so I went back and I read his books because I just got hooked on them. And I noticed that you published some of them. So would you have edited him then?
I did. Most of his career he was at Dutton and Random House. And I kept trying to get him to publish with me. And he kept saying, Otto, you don't want me. They pay me way too much money. I never earn out. You'll lose a fortune if you publish me. But eventually I did. I got to publish his last two novels. And yes, I edited him pretty heavily on one book and not so heavily on the other. The Shanghai Factor was a fantastically brilliant book about China and recognizing the threat that China is to America in many ways. As thieves, they steal information from the government, from the military, and from private businesses, and have cost the American economy hundreds of billions of dollars over the years. And he understood all of that. Yeah, I always had the sense that Charles McCary knew everything in the world, and everybody else just could aspire to know all the things that he knew. But yeah, there were a couple of things in the Shanghai Factor that needed a little tidying up, and he was extremely receptive to it. He was a great, great person to write, to work with, and what a great writer, just a sheer poet.
I can't thank you enough for telling me about his work, because they really are fabulous books.
I'm so glad that you learned to discover him and enjoyed him as much as I do.
My guest is Otto Penzler. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, your source for public service journalism and music discovery. And let's talk about some of these stories in the best mystery stories of the year. Tell us about the process. How do you choose them?
Well, the selection process is not as simple as it might seem. I have a reader. I have this wonderful woman named Michelle Slung, who has been working with me for about 40 years. And she has many skills, but her greatest by far is her ability to read quickly, to read intelligently. And she looks at something in the neighborhood of 3,000 to 4,000 stories a year. It's an astronomical number when you think about an average book would have 15 to 20 stories. Mm. And she looks at 3,000 to 4,000. I subscribe to over 100 literary journals, but we also look at all anthologies, short story collections, consumer publications. And she looks at all these and reads very quickly. And, of course, many of them aren't mysteries. You can't tell from a title. I remember in past years, I published in this series stories titled The Disaster Stamps of Pluto. And Aardvark, one that said Aardvark to, I forget what the second title is, goes about an encyclopedia, volume one of an encyclopedia. And you can't tell from the title if it's a mystery. And even reading the first couple of pages. You sometimes can't tell. And so she looks at all these stories. And then she sends me the ones that she thinks are good enough to be considered. So in an average year, I would look at 200, 250 of these stories. And then I would, from that, I would cull down to the 50 best, by which I really mean the 50 that I like the most. Mm-hmm. Best is hard. You know, somebody else might have a different view of what is the best. And then those 50 go to the guest editor, who reads the 50 and then picks the 20 best or the 20 that he or she likes the most, and those get into the book. And that's the way this process has worked for years, and it works well.
And they have to have work that's been published in another publication, and they have to have that postmark on there in a timely fashion. Otherwise, they miss the boat for that year.
Correct. It's a calendar year. So this book, which is the 2021 volume, just came out, has stories that were published in 2020. And it doesn't matter whether the book comes, the magazine or the anthology or short story collection in which it appeared has the wrong date on it. If it has the 2020 date, it was eligible for this book. A literary journal published by almost always by universities, they frequently have winter 2020. Well, some of them come out in December, some come out in January. Mm-hmm. And if it gets here after December 31st, it's no longer considered because it has to be a very strict deadline. Otherwise, we couldn't get the book out in time to make sense.
Sure.
So that's the way it has to work.
Well, this is such a wonderfully diverse collection. It's The Mysterious Bookshop Presents the Best Mystery Stories of the Year. We've been joined by Otto Penzler. You've got big names in here, and you've also got a number of authors I had not read, and they were new discoveries for me, and all kinds of different approaches in these stories. And I'd like to talk about a few of these
Well, you know, Vic, the fact that you say that, and I appreciate that, and this year it actually does have a bunch of big names. It has never been the goal of these books to publish big names. It's always been about the best stories.
Mm.
But as it happens, I got very lucky. The first book that I'm doing for Mysterious Press in this series happened to have Stephen King, Sarah Paretsky, James Lee Burke, David Morrell, even a story by Sue Grafton that was published in 2020 for the first time, and Sue has been gone for getting close to 5 years. The Mystery Writers of America were doing an anthology celebrating the 75th anniversary of MWA. And her husband, her widower, said, "Hey, I have this story that never got published. It's still lying in Sue's, you know, among her papers. Do you want that?" And so MWA published it in their anniversary volume, and I read it, and it's every bit as good as anything that Sue Grafton ever wrote.
That was a real treat.
Yeah, it was, and it's called "If You Want Something Done Right." ..
Uh-huh.
And it's about a woman hiring a hitman.
Mm-hmm. It's really dark, and the thing that caught my attention was she actually mentions a cell phone, which you never, ever see in any of her Kinsey Millhones, because they're all pre-cell phone, and she actually mentioned
it. Correct, yeah.
That tickled me. Let's talk about some of these other stories in here. Let me pick a couple that I'm sure you will remember.
Why don't you let me pick the story? And I'll
okay, let's do that. Go ahead.
Otherwise, you're going to keep embarrassing me.
Okay. Sounds good.
The Stephen King story
is
so wonderful. It originally appeared in Harper's Magazine. And it's a fairly short story. And it doesn't seem like much is happening. And it's just two guys on a park bench talking. somebody's sitting there, somebody joins them, and they're talking and having a relatively happy, casual conversation, friendly, and then there's a surprise. I don't want to say what the surprise is, but it's so unexpected. You almost take in your breath. You know, you almost gasp when you read this and come to the conclusion.
Well, it's pure Stephen King, that's for sure. It is so dark.
It sure is. You know, and listen, there are several pretty dark stories in here. The Joyce Carol Oates story is so unusual. It is a conversation about, is obviously based on one of the Manson girls. Mm-hmm. You know, there were the murders that he kind of orchestrated a long time ago and had people committing murders for him. And there were a bunch of very young women, the part of his family, who perpetrated these unconscionable, heinous acts of violence. And one of them comes up, although they don't use the real names of those characters, it is quite clearly one of the Manson family girls. Mm-hmm. And it's a monologue. And she is talking to somebody who's interviewing her. And it starts off, and she's saying, you know, basically, I'm a changed person. I'm not who I was. I'm remorseful, all of those things. And as the story continues, she gets more and more heated. And by the time we get to the end of the story, we know she is not remorseful. She is not a changed person. She is where she belongs. You know, and actually, it's somewhat timely because several of the Manson family girls are being released, and I worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you should too.
Joyce did quite a job on that one, and these were all
so amazing. She's just the most amazing writer.
She also
I view her as the greatest living writer who has not yet won the Nobel Prize.
Well, she's certainly prolific. It's amazing how much work she puts out. It's incredible.
Yeah. She works all the time. You know, she doesn't, and she's constantly accused of being overly prolific. And she said, I don't really think of myself as being prolific. I just work all the time. I don't waste a lot of time. And I become very good friends with her. I publish her. I've been publishing her, not exclusively. She has another publisher. But I've been publishing her for about 15, 17, 18 years. And she is a relentless letter writer. She loves to go to dinners, loves to go to parties. She throws parties. She runs 6 miles a day.
Oh, my.
Or she bicycles 15 miles a day. She's actually slowed down about that. She doesn't do it quite every day anymore the way she used to.
Mm.
She said, I'm getting older.
Yeah. Well, you have a story in here by James Lee Burke, and I think I mentioned to you in the emails that we exchanged that I was getting ready to interview Jim for his new novel. And during that interview, he repeated what you said, that he thought this was his best short story that he'd ever written, and
yeah.
It's pretty dark stuff. And
it sure is. You know, it's about a father and his son who are out on the water, and suddenly they see bodies floating that have been burned, and it's set around World War II.
Yeah, it's called Harbor Lights.
Harbor Lights is the name of the story, and it's quite an extraordinary story. But I have to say, I'm a real sucker for James Lee Burke. Anytime he has a short story, that story goes to the top of the pile. I've got to read it. Because he is such a master. He really knows the language well. And one of the things that he is able to do in this story, as well as in his novels, he doesn't write a whole lot of stories, unfortunately, only one every two or three years. But it's the same as his novels. In addition to the darkness and the occasional violence, there's also a sensitivity and a poignancy that appears in virtually all of his works.
Mm.
And you can't separate them in the way he works, because his characters come to life in such a powerful way that the bad things that happen, the bad things that surround them, make you know these characters and feel what these characters feel. What an extraordinary achievement for a writer to be able to do.
He's amazing. My guest is Otto Penzler, and the book is The Mysterious Bookshop Presents the Best Mystery Stories of the Year. And when we were exchanging emails last month, I mentioned Jim, and you had an anecdote about James Crumley. And so I was talking to Jim, and I mentioned Crumley, and he says, yeah, can you, like, turn off your recorder? I want to talk about him. So he wanted it off the record. And
yeah.
Your mention of Crumley made me go and dig up all the Crumleys, and I see you published him as well. What a fascinating guy.
Oh, my goodness. I think he wrote the single greatest private eye story of all time, The Last Good Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful title if you think about The Last Good Kiss. And I love Raymond Chandler. I love Dashiell Hammett. But that one story, that one novel, is so perfect. And as it happens, it has influenced so many of the writers that have been working in recent years. They have claimed that without The Last Good Kiss, they couldn't have written what they write. And this is Dennis Lehane,
uh-huh.
It's Michael Connelly, it's George Pelicanos. All of them have talked about that book as the greatest influence on their own writing.
He's kind of a cult figure, though, isn't he? Because when he was alive, his books really didn't sell very well, did they?
No, they did not. And it remains inexplicable to me that he wasn't a big bestseller. I got to publish his last couple of books, and they didn't sell all that well either, in spite of all the efforts that we put into it. He just didn't speak to everybody, and somehow he just never became the household name that somebody like Michael Connelly, who deserves to be a household name. Don't misunderstand. I don't want to take anything away from Connelly or Lehane, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow it just never happened for Crumley. And it was true of McCary also. You know, it's not always a fair world.
Well, The Tears of Autumn. What a book.
What a book.
By McCary. Oof.
I think it's the greatest espionage novel written by an American. I think there were a couple of John le Carrés that are equally good.
Mm.
But for an American, Tears of Autumn, if anybody who reads The Tears of Autumn will know that it's absolutely true. And it's his book about the Kennedy assassination. And it's not. It's fiction. But it seems it must be true. And there are elements. I asked him about this. I said, you know, is any of this true, or did you make it all up? He said, I did not make it all up.
Mm.
That
Paul Christopher series is absolutely stunning.
All
those books. My guest is Otto Penzler. Otto, I know you read a lot, and you read so much that you really don't remember it all, but I'm wondering, what have you read recently that really knocked you out?
A British espionage writer.
Charles Cumming.
Charles Cumming. How did you know that? How did you know I was going to say that?
I'm a mind reader, Otto.
Well, pretty good. Yes. He is a huge bestseller in England, and I read him some years ago. I read the first couple of books, and then I just never have enough time. Everybody thinks I read everything, but I don't. There's just never enough time. I'm reading short stories. I'm reading manuscripts, of course. So I never have enough time, but I loved his books then. And then there was a recent book that came out, a big bestseller in England that will be publishing, Mysterious Press, will be publishing in January or February, called Box 88. And I read that. I was like, whoa, this is so good. And then I read the sequel to it. It's about an organization called Box 88. It's a secret organization that is like the CIA for America, like MI6 in England. But it's so secret that even the heads of government don't know it exists.
Uh-huh.
And it's their battle against the bad guys. And it's so beautifully written. He writes long books. The best espionage writers tend to write fairly substantial books, fairly thick books. But the writing is so beautiful, and the characters just come to life. You stay with those characters in your brain. And something bad happens to a character. I won't get into any more detail than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, and I said, I can't believe you would let that person die. How could you do that? And he said, well, sometimes you have to do it. You just have to do it.
Uh-huh.
And it was really sad to see this person go. I wanted that person to continue to live through many more books.
Mm.
And didn't happen.
I've had Charles on the show, and I'm really looking forward to reading those books.
You did. So, you know, he's in England, but yeah. you got him to
I've had him,
do this with you.
I've had him on. I think he had a book out on maybe Minotaur.
That's who used to publish him.
I know a guy at Minotaur who kind of takes care of me, and he got me an interview with him. So,
I'm glad that you know who he is. I'm glad you appreciate him. I hope maybe you'll have him on your show again.
I hope so too. I'm planning to read Box 88. Is it Jacob at Mysterious? Sent me a copy of that. So, an advanced copy. So
I'm sorry, he did send it.
I think he did. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
I think that just turned up in my mail, so I'm ready to go.
Oh, you're in for a treat. It's just a terrific book. It goes back and forth in time, the present, and then again, it's really based on the Lockerbie bombing.
Oh, okay.
And it's riveting. I mean, you won't be able. Once you get started, you'll never be able to stop. Guaranteed.
Are you already working on the next one in the series?
Yes. Yeah, the next one is finished. It's been edited. It's called Judas 62, and it'll come out a year later. So, you know, you'll have to wait. But Box 88 will be very satisfying.
And what about this series of mystery stories? Do you have your next editor slotted in yet?
Yes. It's going to be Sarah Paretsky.
Oh.
Who will be the guest editor for the next book. And I've started to do all that. Michelle Slung has been reading voraciously, and so have I. I've got my big stack of books of stories that I'll be sending to Sarah. But some people like to do it bit by bit as it happens. Others like to wait till the end of the year. And it makes more sense to wait till the end of the year because we don't know how many stories are going to come in between now and December 31st. So generally on January 1st, or as soon as the mail is available, I would send them off and she'll start reading. And next September, we will have The Mysterious Bookshop Presents the Best Mystery Stories of the Year 2022.
Wonderful. Otto, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Vic. I really appreciate being on your show, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
You've been listening to The Book Nook. My guest has been Otto Penzler, and we were talking about The Mysterious Bookshop Presents the Best Mystery Stories of the Year with special guest editor Lee Child. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis.